Or Prime Minister will join them as they remind the world of the 8 Millennium Development Goals set back in 2000 to halve global poverty by 2015. And I'm happy to say the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, joins us from a radio car now. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what's your message today?
Two messages, really. One is that we want to urge the Prime Minister and the British government to keep up what's already been some quite strong advocacy on their part with the international community, to keep working at the Millennium Development Goals, especially at the special session of the UN in September. And second, to say that the churches worldwide, our own church in particular on this occasion, are there to help, and we have networks and resources that can be deployed in delivering these goals at grassroots level.
Are you worried that the world is forgetting these Millennium Development Goals?
Well, progress towards realising them in the last few years hasn't been impressive. We're well short of even the halfway mark with several of them, and I think that's a matter of real urgency. We're not talking about something where we've got, you know, 20 years' time to waste on this. People are dying, children are dying every few seconds. We've got an environmental challenge which gets more serious by the day. And, of course, the less you educate, the less you develop, the more trouble you're storing up for the future.
The lofty goals of the Millennium Development Goals, of course, get waylaid by events, don't they? We're hearing even today of Ethiopia, drought, high food prices, exactly, making life extremely difficult there.
And I think people couldn't have predicted when the goals were first defined just how serious the food supply crisis would have become by this stage. But that, of course, just underlines the urgency and underlines the need for, as I say, for our government to keep up its advocacy.
We're really talking about Africa here, aren't we, very largely? And the church there has a role. You said that's one of your messages today. What can the church do to advance the Millennium Development Goals?
More a question, really, of what the church already is doing. And in terms of delivering education in many African countries, the church is quite simply a key player. It delivers most of what is effective there. And in terms of advancing, extending education, I'm thinking here of Sudan in particular, where in the last 2 years we've had the Episcopal Church, the Anglican sister church in Sudan, building 50 classrooms. It'll build the same number in the coming year. And in that way, it's well ahead of what's done by a number of NGO projects that aren't rooted in the churches. In Burundi, in a post-conflict situation, you've had the church through the Mothers' Union doing fundamental work, especially with women, with women's education, women's health and post-trauma counselling. This is going on everywhere.
Which is more important, what you're marching about today or the kinds of arguments you're having at the Lambeth Conference back in Canterbury?
Well, of course, the Lambeth Conference is not just about argument. It is about these matters. And in these few days, particularly of the conference, today and tomorrow and over the weekend, the focus will be on the Millennium Goals, will be on environmental issues and the role of bishops locally in dealing with them. So it's not as if the conference is all housekeeping and we take a day off to connect with the real world. We are looking at this very, very seriously. And there's a lot of stories being exchanged about what's happening on the ground.
But if the church is to do good in Africa, does unity matter to the church? Does the unity of the Anglican Communion matter at all? Or would a schism in the church, for example, make very little difference on the kind of practical steps the church takes to advance and progress people's lives on the continent?
Some of the best stories we've got of the church cooperating in the Millennium Goals actually have to do with international partnerships, not with, you know, wealthy Western churches shipping in the stuff or anything like that, but with the kind of intelligent partnership which lets us do a little bit of leverage for resources to come into countries, which allows, well, I'll give you two examples if I may. One is the work that the Church of England has been able to do in leveraging some money into Burundi for school building. But that's then done on the ground, done by the people locally and organised by the local church. Another example would be the anti-malaria work that's been done in partnership between some African churches and the Episcopal Church in the United States, and over 500,000 mosquito nets distributed through an initiative called Nets for Life, and that's dealt with 12 countries in malaria prevention training. So those partnerships are part of the practical outworking of the unity we're trying to preserve, and that is one reason why it matters.
Would, though, the Episcopal Church working with the African churches, do they need to agree? Do they need to be part of one communion? Do they need to agree on their interpretation of the scriptures in order to be able to work together? Because, I mean, looking at the dilemmas and the difficulties, the challenges you face down at the Lambeth Conference, it holding these things together does seem like a very formidable task, doesn't it? And one really wonders whether it's a necessary task or whether you can't just say, look, let's all split. Let's agree to disagree. And, you know, we'll make our partnerships and work on practical things if we need to.
It is a formidable task, but I think what the message we're getting is that if we do divide, it's not that we then have a sort of distant and amiable relationship. It's much more that people will retire into their corners and not cooperate. And that's what we don't want to see happening. Now, what degree of unity, what degree of agreeing to differ, as you put it, we can live with, is exactly what's making this so neuralgic a matter at the moment.
Well, it seems like the division is there, and, you know, no amount of drafting clever texts or anything like that is going to paper over it.
No, it's not about drafting clever texts. I think it's about agreements that will hold water, about how we consult with each other. And it's about, as I say, recognising the limits of disagreement. It may be that we can manage this. It may be that it'll take a lot longer. But that's the work we've got to do. And the encouraging thing about the conference so far has been the manifest willingness of people here to work at it. Nobody's come, I think, assuming it's all over.
I've seen an interesting argument put that really you're in the position of someone trying to sort of maintain a very centralised institution of the Anglican Communion in a world, a post-colonial world, where it would make more sense for everybody to split up, and that there's no real advantage to scale when it comes to a church. There's an advantage to scale when it comes to a political party. There's an advantage to being a big company sometimes rather than the small one. But in some ways, it's very hard to say to an African, look, you're run from Canterbury. Is that a modern phenomenon that maybe just should pass on now?
Well, it prompts me to smile rather wryly with the idea that Canterbury runs things. The Anglican Communion has never been a centralised institution. It's been one of the least centralised churches in the world, in fact, which is part of where our difficulties come from. Canterbury has what people sometimes call a convening role. I can invite people, I can get people around the table. And the historic role of being symbolically the mother church for so many of our partners. And that's come through very clearly, I think, in this last few days. Having people in Canterbury, especially in the cathedral, has clearly mattered to people. So it's not as if we've got a centralised bureaucracy giving top-down instructions. Every single governing body in the Anglican Communion represents all the regions of the church. The Lambeth Conference was designed this time by a group which included several people from Africa, some from America, some from Asia, the Pacific, Hong Kong, and that's the pattern of all that we do. So I don't think the centralisation argument will wash. The challenge is much more how we cope with the pluralism we've already got and how we stop that becoming destructive rather than positive.
Fair point. Just finally, I should probably get a comment from you on the reported comments of Cardinal Diaz from the Catholic Church, that Western churches sometimes suffer from spiritual Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. He apparently said this at Lambeth yesterday. An odd analogy, I would have thought.
An odd analogy, but I guess what he was saying was that we're perhaps inclined to ignore the legacy of the past and how it can be positively deployed in the present. I think what he said for the conference was in many ways very important, and to have someone from outside the Anglican Communion giving an affirming but also quite challenging presentation was a very important part of our work this week.
Archbishop Rowan Williams, thank you very much indeed.
Coming up to 18.